Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine. Joining us today are Dr. Jolie Strzecki and Dr. Robert Schmidt. They're going to talk about their paper that will appear in the fall 2015 issue of Lab Medicine about using benchmarking as a potential tool for test utilization management.
Hello, I'm Dr. Robert Schmidt. I'm a medical director here at ARUP Laboratories. I direct the clinical laboratory at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, and I'm also director for the Center of Effective Medical Testing at the University of Utah.
And I'm Dr. Jolie Strzecki. I am a medical director of endocrinology at ARUP Laboratories, and I'm also an assistant professor of pathology at the University of Utah.
We're here to present the results of a benchmarking study we did on vitamin D. This is part of a new program that we've introduced to supplement our analysis of test ordering pattern program as part of our utilization management program. We believe this findings from this study will help you improve utilization and cut costs.
As most people know, vitamin D is really a pretty hot topic, and a lot of laboratories, a lot of hospitals have seen a huge increase in test requests for vitamin D. And there's a lot of things behind that. There's a lot of information that's available out in the press about vitamin D and its role in pretty much every single disease process out there. But a lot of more recent studies have shown that perhaps the amount of vitamin D deficiency that's been proposed in this country might be a little overblown. So over time, we're starting to see a decrease in the amount of vitamin D testing, which is probably appropriate.
So let's look at the background for this study. Jolie, what motivated this study?
So most vitamin D orders are placed to assess nutritional status or overall bone health. In these cases, the correct test to order is 25-hydroxyvitamin D. However, we know that a lot of people actually order 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D by mistake when they actually mean to assess nutritional status. There's nothing wrong with the 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D test. It's just that the indications for that particular test are really quite narrow, so we would expect that volume to actually be quite low. Unfortunately, there's no guidelines to tell us how often you should be ordering 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. So we conducted a benchmarking study to actually assess this.
Many clients are now doing the 25-hydroxyvitamin D in-house. And when we assess test ordered patterns, we often look at the ratio of the 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D to 25-hydroxyvitamin D. And we're unable to tell that now that many people are doing it in-house. So we ask people to report to us their total testing, both send out and what they do in-house. So we use two different measures to assess ordering patterns in this study. The first, we looked at a measure of order accuracy, and that's the ratio of the 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D to 25-hydroxyvitamin D. And the thinking there is that most 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D orders are ordered in error. That's not necessarily true. Some are correct, but that ratio gives sort of a crude index of an error rate or accuracy. Then we also looked at a measure of order frequency, because there's some concerns that vitamin D is ordered too frequently altogether. And so for that, we looked at the total number of vitamin D orders relative to complete blood counts. And we just use complete blood counts as a common denominator of sort of testing volume across hospitals. So it looks like the average order rate for the 125 is about 4% relative to the 25-hydroxyvitamin D. Any comments on that? With a hospital at 4%, would you consider that a reasonable level of 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D ordering?
Well, again, it depends on the patient population, but it's very hard to know because there are no guidelines in place that say exactly how much 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D testing we should be doing.
Okay. So I guess that's the power of these benchmarking studies, is that even in spite of no guidelines, we can at least see what's normal. And, you know, people that are out here, the 1 in 6 level, we can be, you know, raise the hypothesis that there's something going on there, that there's most likely misutilization. It's not necessarily true, but I think probably true. And let me just mention anecdotally that we've seen clients that have taken the 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D off the menu entirely with very little complaint from clinicians. I know of one hospital that sends an automatic email to anyone who orders a 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D and says, your order is canceled. If you meant to order it for these particular indications, we'll happily reinstate the order. And to my knowledge, that it was over a year before they had a call from a clinician asking for those particular indications. And another hospital had the same experience in the Southeast. It's a network of hospitals. The pathologist there told me he took it off the menu. It was a year before he had an endocrinologist calling, asking for it. So even though on average here, it looks like about 4% is normal. I think those anecdotes sort of indicate that maybe the correct level is probably even less than that.
I agree. Another important part of this is an individual hospital can actually look at this data and say, can we compare ourselves to a similar hospital and find out, are we testing a lot more 125 vitamin Ds than our peers are? And by looking at that more closely, you're actually able to possibly save an individual hospital, some of these hospitals, possibly up to $50,000 per year. And that really shows the power of benchmarking. We're also able to identify outliers, and we can save clients money even in situations where, like this particular circumstance, there are no medical guidelines.
How did the ratio of the 125 dihydroxy vitamin D to 25 hydroxy vitamin D change from the year 2012 to 2013? So Jolie, what's your assessment of this?
So obviously a decrease in error is better. The majority of sites actually improved between 2012 and 2013, although a few sites not only saw increases, but they saw large increases in the error rate. So this kind of a benchmarking study can actually show you how your testing is changing relative to others. More importantly, it also provides some insight into the impact of managerial interventions. We'd like to think that these people that are doing things right, we'd like to think that they actually have an active utilization management program and that the improvement in testing is due to that. But unfortunately, we're not able to collect that type of information in this particular study, at least not in sufficient amounts to actually determine whether or not that was the case. So we'd like to know what works and what doesn't, and this is definitely an objective for future studies.
As I mentioned before, there's some concern that people are over-ordering vitamin D altogether. And the way we assessed this was looked at the ratio of all the vitamin D tests relative to complete blood counts. And that's just sort of a crude index of a common denominator of testing activity. On average, roughly, about one vitamin D is ordered for every five CBCs. Jolie, any comments on this?
Well, it actually almost looks like there's three different groups, right? There's a low frequency, a moderate frequency, and a high frequency group.
Do you think the high frequency is out of bounds? Does that represent misutilization most likely?
I would guess that it is because it's so much higher than that moderate group, the group that's right in the middle. So there's probably some imbalance.
So what about in the lower group? Would that be underutilization, perhaps?
It very well could be, but it has a lot to do with the patient population that particular site is actually serving. So it might be right for their testing site, but it definitely is lower than the moderate or the medium group.
But it's probably worthwhile for those hospitals to at least take a look at either end of the distribution.
Absolutely, and that's what a benchmarking study does. It allows you to look at your peers and see how you compare.
Okay. Should emphasize, too, that there's powerful things about benchmarking studies. One of them is that without guidelines, we can identify outliers, and I think that raises the hypothesis of misutilization, and therefore you can have a targeted look at places that are likely to have high yield, where you're going to find misutilization. So one of the weaknesses of benchmarking studies, sort of the flip side of that, they have many strengths, is they just say what's normal and not what's right. So if we look at this ratio of one vitamin D for every five CBCs, that seems to be on average, that's what's normal, but we don't know whether that's what's right. It's a little bit like measuring BMIs in the U.S. population. You know, the BMI is a bit more than what's healthy, but you know, what's normal is not necessarily right. So the same sort of thing here. Okay, let's look at the percent change in order frequency. So this is looking at the change in vitamin D orders relative to CBCs from the year 2012 to 2013. So Jolie, what's your assessment of this?
Most of the sites actually did show a decrease in vitamin D ordering. A couple of the sites actually show a really large increase in testing frequency also. Can't necessarily explain that, but it definitely looks different than the majority than the sample sites.
So the good news is that people are getting the word and decreasing orders of 125 dihydroxy vitamin D. And on average, it looks like people are decreasing vitamin D orders a bit. And that's probably a good thing.
Absolutely. And I think that really does have a lot to do with increased awareness.
So let's review what we've accomplished in this study. As mentioned before, our ATOP program focuses on things we generally know from medical evidence. In ATOP, we look for adherence to medical guidelines. And unfortunately, medical guidelines are not available for many tests. And thus, we can only provide an ATOP analysis for, you know, quite a limited number of tests. And for that reason, we want to introduce benchmarking as a supplement to ATOP. Benchmarking greatly expands the range of tests we can evaluate because it relies on comparative analysis rather than medical guidelines. In ATOP, we can focus on what is right, and in contrast, in benchmarking, we ask what is normal. And we can compare testing patterns among clients, and by examining the distribution of test patterns, like we did in this study, we can identify outliers. And the working hypothesis is that abnormal testing patterns most likely represent misutilization. Abnormal testing patterns are not necessarily evidence of misutilization, but I would say odds are it usually does. At a minimum, it raises the hypothesis and one can investigate whether the abnormal pattern is in fact a result of misutilization. Basically, benchmarking helps us identify high-yield targets for investigation and management, and it greatly expands the range of tests we can analyze.
This type of a benchmarking program is designed to provide information that can help you not only improve utilization, but also help cut costs. We can all learn and improve by sharing benchmarking data.
We think this survey will provide useful information that can help you cut costs.